We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Real people,
real celebrities,
real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club.
Blast off in your
weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest, an author in the building with us this morning.
That's right, my man MK Asante.
MK Asante.
Now, I read this guy's book about 2-3 weeks ago, and it's funny because I had the book sitting up here for the longest.
For a long time, right?
It's called Buck, but I don't know what made me decide to read it a couple weeks ago. And I really enjoyed it. So I'm like, yo, we got to have this guy up here to talk about his book, Buck.
Well, explain to us what Buck is. I didn't get a chance to read it. I don't really have much time to read. I got 4 kids.
As you can tell by the way he writes, he talks, he doesn't read.
And he's talking about me over there. Yeah. Now tell us about Buck.
All right. Well, first of all, it's really an honor to be here. I watch you guys all the time.
Thank
so, you.
You
know what I'm saying? Much love.
D-riding, bro. That's what the kids say. Yo, you're giving him props, you D-riding. You saw Charlamagne D-riding his book. Now he D-riding Charlamagne.
Well, yo, you read the book and you were thirsty. So, you know what I mean?
Thirsty.
I had to come
on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, when you show interest, that means thirst these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just happy to be here. But, you know, Buck is about the graceful survival against impossible circumstances. You know
what I'm saying? Like what?
I'm from Philly. You know what I mean? Young Buck, Buck Wild, Buck Shots, Buck Town, Slave Buck, Black Buck, Make Buck, Buck Now. Buck encompasses all of those things. I chose the title because it really, my life, it's a coming-of-age memoir. It's my story. It's my journey growing up through Philly, navigating my education, my very informal education, miseducation, re-education, self-education, street education, the difference in the distance between school and education. Mm-hmm. That was all me. And so it's about that journey. It's about my family. It's about my community. It's about how I became, you know, I was someone who got kicked out of every school I went to.
Why?
And then
he was a bad seed. He was a thug.
And then ended up being the youngest tenured professor in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know
what
I mean?
How old are you?
I'm 32 now. But
you look 19.
But when I became a professor, I was 23. And I got tenure when I was 26. You know what I mean? So I've been at academia for a while. And so it's about my journey.
Well, tell us about this journey a little bit. So you're from Philadelphia. You, as Charlamagne would say, you got kicked out of every school. So you were a young thug.
You know what I mean?
So dope.
Shout out to all the kids that, you know, are being overlooked right now. Shout out to all the kids that are labeled bad, because they're really...
Well, you weren't bad if you were selling dope.
No, I wasn't selling dope.
Okay.
But there is some drug selling that goes on in the book.
And what did you do so bad as a child?
In my life, you know, I think I was just rebellious. Mm-hmm. I was rebelling against everything. You know what I mean? I think first of all, the school system, right? It's redundant. It's boring. You know, rote memorization, regurgitation. I wasn't actually learning anything in school. Plus, my family situation was kind of crazy. My brother, he was locked up. My mom, I write about mental health issues. My mom was institutionalized. She had severe depression, suicidal. So my mom was in and out the institutions. You know what I'm saying? And so
your mom and father split.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So all of these things kind of created a perfect storm. Plus, we had the corner boys on my block. You know what I'm saying? They were always out there, and they introduced me to everything. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So by the time I was 14, it was on. You know what I mean? Like, everything you could imagine, everything you don't want your child to, your four kids, everything you don't want them to do,
you were doing.
I was doing. You know what I'm saying? So,
your brother's locked up. It's two questions I wanted to ask you about them.
Yeah.
Is your brother out now?
My brother is definitely out. What's up, Uzi? Ooh-wop, Big Uzito. That's my hero.
First of all, he has to change his name from Uzi.
Ooh-wop, Uzi is not it.
How many years did he do? Like,
he was in and out, you know what I'm saying? But when he was in Arizona, which is for most of the book, the book takes place between the ages of 13 to 18.
Gotcha.
And so he was like locked up for most of that time when I was coming
up. He shot somebody.
No.
In the book, that's what he was in jail for in Arizona?
No. Remember,
did you read the book?
Yeah. But he shot somebody.
Nah, he didn't shoot anybody. You know what I'm saying?
He just beat him up or something.
Nah, he didn't beat anybody up. But he did beat other people up. That he just didn't get locked up for that.
Hold on, time out. Slow down. What was he locked up for in Arizona?
In Arizona, it was a situation with a young girl, and he was young himself.
Oh,
he was 17.
Rape. Yeah, statutory. Got you. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But he was young himself. He was 17. The girl was like 14. He didn't know. She was white. He's black, obviously, and she was a runaway. Her parents found out, and it was just, you know.
Right, gotcha.
He got put in the system.
So what got you straight, you know, from being on the corner with the D-Boys and being so rebellious? What got you to fix up?
I mean, there was a couple factors, man. First of all, I saw where that life takes you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whether it was my brother, whether it was one of my best friends, Amir, who got murdered while I was there. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things kind of shaped me, but also the blank page, man. That's what this book really is about. It's about finding your purpose. That blank page saved me. America enraged me. Then that trick paid me. New slaves, old slavery. Grandma told me streets far from holy. Now I'm lonely. My homies' bodies is holy. So basically, the blank page saved me. That blank piece of paper in front of me. The first mm-hmm. time I got a creative writing assignment. The first time I was able to express myself. Things started flowing and I gripped the pen and something shot down my spine and sat me straight up. You know, the mm-hmm. pen was heavy like it was made of stone. And that first class, man, that first time I was able to express myself, it changed my life because then from writing, I started reading. I wanted to be a good writer, so I had to be a good reader. And when I started reading, I had an epiphany. Like, oh, now I realize why reading was illegal for slaves back in the day, because I realized that we think in words, we sub-vocalize. Right. So the more words we know, the more things we can think about. And so for me, reading became connected to my liberation.
And it helps you transcend your circumstances too, because they always say anything you want to hide from a black person, put it in a book.
You know what I'm saying?
The information is there. We just gotta give ourselves access to it.
Now, you said something earlier about the curriculum of most schools, you know, and you said it's boring and kids don't get it. And I agree with that. And I'm a big... Definitely with my kids, where I want to show them life. Like, I like to take them out. I like to teach them what a mortgage is and how to invest money, because I think with that, they learn more and it's more interesting.
Real
because it's
education.
Real life. And I hated school. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I wasn't into it. So, you know, during school, I always dreamed of what I wanted to do, whether it was music, whether it was play ball or whatever it was. Now, you also said you're a professor.
Yes.
Now, explain to us how you teach. What makes you different than all of the things you said you disliked?
Okay, that's what's up. Well, I'm a professor at Morgan State University, which is in Baltimore, Maryland.
Let me tell you one thing about Morgan State. I'm going to tell you why I didn't go.
Okay.
when I went to Morgan State to check it out, to go on a tour, they were playing dice.
It was too black for that beige boy.
No, they were playing dice on the actual dorm steps. And my dad was like, you're not going to go here. This is like Queens. And I wound up going to Hampton. It was between Morgan and Hampton. And I wound up going to Hampton.
Yeah, he went with Pusha T was selling bricks of coke as opposed to guys playing dice on campus. Pusha T selling weight out to school. You didn't want to go be around the dice. You want to be around the cocaine. Sorry, Pusha. Your statute of limitations is up. Well, you know,
well, you know, Morgan is right in the heart of Baltimore. You know right. what I mean? That's one of the reasons why I love it, and one of the reasons why I teach there. You know what I mean? Because of it's right in the community. You know, but as a professor, man, you know, I bring that experiential learning that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, we bring real things into class. So I teach creative writing, I teach film, and my whole thing is, you know, I found my voice, I found my purpose, and mm-hmm. I'm a writer. This is my fourth book, actually. You know what I mean? So
really?
Yeah, this is my fourth. So right. you know what? And this it's the only one that's on the bestseller list. You know what I mean? So this is kind of my most recognized book.
Gotcha.
But you know, I've been writing for a while, so my whole thing is helping other people find their voice. You know what I mean? So I work with students all the time to help them cultivate their own voices mm-hmm. so that they can express themselves, you know, in the way that it did for me, because this stuff saved my life, man. Reading, writing,
just need more of that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And what we did, what was so crazy about this project is I didn't want to stop at just the book. You know, I got the Sundance Film Fellowship to write the movie, so I'm working on the movie. But then what we did was we decided to do something completely different, which was to create a soundtrack for the book. So we created an original soundtrack with original music.
That's why he keep busting out in the rhymes.
Yeah, yeah.
But how do we get more of us to be professors? Because nowadays being a professor, being a teacher is not cool. You know what I mean? It's a rapper, it's a DJ, it's a basketball player. Yeah. I don't really see young African American professors. And if I do, they're usually teaching gym.
Yeah. Jim. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's
true.
No, it's not.
You're right. I mean, you're right.
I don't really see that many.
You're right.
I went to a couple of high schools to speak, and a lot of the African American teachers were doing gym or what do they call it? Physical education.
Yeah.
A lot of the Spanish teachers, I'm serious, a lot of Spanish teachers were doing, guess what?
Well, I mean, rappers
Spanish.
And DJs have a dope mark.
It's the truth. You know, I went to school, and, you know, Miss whatever, what do you speak? What do you teach? Spanish, you know?
Yeah, Miss Rodriguez.
Miss Garcia.
Miss Garcia.
But you know, like the thing is, I think rappers and DJs have dope marketing plans.
Right.
And I think in a lot of ways for academia, for professors, I am part of the new marketing plan. Right. I am the new model. I think that a lot of times, and that's why I travel. I've been to over 40 countries. I travel all around this country, and I want young people to see me. That's why I wrote a memoir, not a novel, not something made up, a memoir. I want them to see me. Well, I got a soundtrack to
professor
it, you know what I'm saying? the only professor passing out the mixtape for the last day of class. That's actually one of my class. I teach a hip-hop class where we look at the social political issues that affect hip-hop, that hip-hop was birthed from. We look at the evolution of it. We look at the culture of it. We really study it, you know, analytically. But, you know, one of the things I try to do, man, is to let them see me so they can see what a professor could look like.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be some archaic thing that they have in their mind. It could be something new. It could be something fresh. Your professor could be a rapper. You know what I mean? Word. Your professor could be a rapper and could be a writer and could be a filmmaker. And, could, you know, I think we live in a world now where we're out of these boxes, man. Like, you have to be multidimensional in this currency, in this environment. And so I think part of it, how do we get more? You guys having me on. You know
Absolutely.
What I'm saying?
That's part of it.
You know what I'm saying? Because they see, like, wow, like, there's so many people, young people that I've come in contact with who I've changed their whole model, their whole blueprint. Because they're like, oh, wow, you could do that. And you could do, I didn't even know I could do that and have access to these things and have the resources and take care of my family and be able to do all these, you know. So it's really like showing them. That's the thing. I think our whole generation is about visuals, right? Gotcha. Instagram. So we have to show, mm-hmm. right? When you show, It resonates.
And I think right now, you know, people will probably say, well, he don't look like a professor. Well, the question you should be asking is, what does a professor look like?
Exactly.
But you know what? But that's what most people think. Now, I was thinking to myself when he said he was a professor, I was like, damn, does he wear that T-shirt and hat in class?
Well, why not?
Yeah.
I think it would be dope. But
definitely. But this is exactly how I dress
that's
in class.
Dope.
You can ask all my students. I come in fitted, snapbacks, Tim's, whatever, because that's who I am. You know what I'm saying? And just, you know, when you become whatever profession you are, it doesn't mean you take away who you are and your core essence, because at the end of the day, that rebellious 13, 14, 15, 16 year old, that's still me.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so what I've done in a lot of ways is, and that's what Buck really is about, that whole notion of Buck now, I've become a lot smarter. You know, I used to be, I think, a rebel without a cause, and now I'm a rebel with a purpose and a cause. You know what I mean? So the rebellion is still there. You know, I was in Baltimore. I was out there with him. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's part of my spirit.
You live in Baltimore now, right?
Yeah, I live in Baltimore, and I live in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
What did you see out there as you were down there for the Baltimore riots?
Because you blew up some cars.
And the reason I say that is, you know, me and Charlamagne believes he doesn't agree. But he said he understands with what.
Yeah, I believe in cause and effect. I believe you can't keep pushing somebody and expect somebody not to push back. And I may not agree with the riots, but I understand why they're happening.
And I feel like a lot of times when we get those riots, we hurt ourselves in the long run. We hurt our own community. We hurt the stores and the places that we shop at, that we, you know, own or purchase or have to do with. And I think we kind of hurt ourselves at the end of the day. You know, you know, at the end of the day, I hate to see us get arrested and get felonies on our record. And then when we try to get a job, we can't because of a mistake or something that we did. Foolishness or that we shouldn't have done.
But the problem is they can't get jobs right now anyway, regardless of that. See, what we saw in Baltimore was, like, we saw the crazy, what happens when you underfund the school system, right? When you invest in the prison industrial complex, right? When your schools are criminal, when you don't invest in neighborhoods. We saw all these things coming out. And so we got destitute poverty in Baltimore, right? We got underdevelopment. We got, like I said, an educational system that takes money, hundreds of millions of dollars out of the school system every year, and they put that money into prison industrial complex, right? And so we see now the illustration of what happens when you do that to a community, when a community is constantly beat and beat and beat and oppressed and oppressed and oppressed. We see what happens. And so I'm actually surprised that it doesn't happen more often.
You know, but
every city in America has the potential to do that.
No, you're right.
Absolutely.
Like right now.
We tore up our communities, but it's
not
like,
our communities. Let's be for real.
We don't really own.
It's really not ours. We don't own none of that stuff.
But it's where we shop. It's where we do business.
We drive to the next town over.
You know what? We're not going to be welcome to the next time over. And a lot of people can't drive in the
next
time over.
We're not welcome there now.
But it seems like the things that they care about was they cared about them Baltimore Orioles in that game.
They
made sure that stadium was safe.
Oh, yeah. And you really got a chance to see the classism in Baltimore and in America with the – I don't even call them riots. I call them rebellions. And I feel like these rebellions –
I call them non-peaceful protests.
I feel like these rebellions have been happening since 1619, since black folks basically got here in America. There's been – if you look at the history, it's cyclical. Every – 10, 15 years, you see these huge, what they call riots, what I call rebellions in the urban cities in America, and they always are related to race. And this is historically, you can go back to the 18th century, 19th century, you see these same things happening, whether it's Miami or Philly or Cleveland or Detroit or L.A. or Watts or, you know, Baltimore. It's always the same thing. Newark, right? And so, you know, for me, it's a continuation of that, you know what I mean? And you saw the classism because if you went to the harbor, you saw a whole different story.
Right.
Like, they had, that's when you saw the big guns, you know what I'm saying? The tanks and all of that. And, you know, you know, Whole Foods, nah. None of that happening at Whole Foods.
They were protecting all that.
They were protecting all of that, you know what I mean? And so, you know, they value, we realize in this society that property is more valued than
black
people.
Person's life.
Than a person's life. Because they're talking about violence in Baltimore with the protesters, but actually the only violence really that we saw was violence against Freddie Gray.
And that's my thing.
He broke his neck.
The media can make it seem like it's so bad to riot. How about make it seem like it's so bad for police to kill?
To kill.
Unarmed black men. Or just kill people, period.
All the time. And we just saw in Wisconsin, he just, you know, no charges.
Right?
Robinson.
Yep. Tony Robinson.
Tony Robinson.
Yep.
Tony Robinson.
Now, just a quick little segue. The girl Nia in the book.
Yeah.
Are you still smashing that? You just kind of let that go in the book. It's like you was in love
you
with
a pervert,
her.
Man.
I just want to know. I'm like, so what happened? Did they get married?
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, I got to say, you know, like any brother out there that's doing this thing, shout out to the queen that's holding him down or, you know, because that's so important. For me, when I was young, this book is a coming of age. So this is between the ages of 13 and 18. When I was young, there was a girl named Nia and she really held me down. She actually helped deter me away from some of the negativity.
Gotcha.
She asked questions. She questioned me, you know what I mean, in ways that I hadn't really been questioned. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you doing? Like, she really showed me a different side, and I always appreciate that about her. We're not together, you know what I'm saying? That was a long time ago.
So you got your life together and didn't go back to get her?
I found somebody else, you know what I mean? Later on in life, she found somebody else, too. She's good. We're both good, you know what I mean? I still my friend. She's a psychologist. And she's for the Navy, and she's doing her thing.
How's your mom doing? Because in the book, you talk about your mom's mental health issues.
Yeah, what I do in the book is I intersperse my mom's journal. I used to read my mom's diary back in the day. We didn't talk a lot.
She's still alive?
Yeah, my mom's still alive. Mm. And so I used to read her journal, and in the book, I actually put her actual journal entries in the book. So
did your mom clear this?
Yeah. Okay. In fact, my mom, it was her idea because she struggled so bad with severe mental health issues. She felt like the black community, we don't talk about depression and stuff enough. Mm. You know what I mean? So she said, because she talks about depression, suicide, all of this stuff in her journal entries. And she said, you know, when I was writing my book, she was like, you should use it because even though it's personal and I don't want like, I don't want the world to know all my problems. Mm-hmm. He said it might be helpful in starting a dialogue and creating a conversation, because a lot of times we just like, oh, it's all good, it's all good. But it's really not all good, and we self-medicate, but we don't really, like, when I first started understanding about what mental health issues are, like all the different, I realized that every single person I grew up with has a mental health issue.
Absolutely.
Everybody on the block.
Yes.
Needs help.
Know, when you just pull out a gun and start shooting, something is clearly wrong
with you. Something is clear. And we, you know, we might be like, yo, Scoop crazy, man. Yo, Scoop be wildin'. But Scoop
really
is crazy. Really,
he
crazy.
Really crazy.
Like, yeah, like, he really.
We now to start using the clinical terms, because we understand the very. Scoop's really bipolar. Scoop really is psychopathic, you know? Scoop's really a sociopath. That's what you start doing.
Yeah, so my mom is doing a lot better now. I realized that a lot of the things that me and my brother were doing, just, you know, we were wilding out, it kind of affected her. You know, depression is chemical imbalance, so it's not just what somebody does, but we were exacerbating the problem by some of the things we were doing, you know what I mean? So my mom's doing a lot better now, you know.
Do you think your father left her because of the mental health issues, or did they really just grow apart?
Man, I think, like, he doesn't really understand mental health. You know, mm-hmm. I think some people in our community, we still don't really, we, like, just snap out of it. You know what I'm
right.
saying? But we don't really
understand. Boy, stop acting crazy.
Yeah, stop acting crazy. But we don't really understand. So I don't think he understands, like, the gravity of the situation. You know what I mean?
What's your relationship like with him now?
You know, it's always been turbulent my whole life. So right now, you know what I mean? It's pretty much, we don't really have it's not really popping.
He's got to be proud of you, though, because, I mean, in a lot of ways, when I see you now and read about how he was in the book, you are him.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, well, no, I mean.
Very pro-black, very conscious, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and that's a lot to do with my mom, too. Like, my mom, I mean, both my parents, I was born in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. Like, my parents, you know how at the end of Belly, Nas is like, yo, we should move to Africa. Mm-hmm. My parents actually did that. My parents are from America. They, way before Belly, decided to move to Africa. They changed their names. So I was born in Zimbabwe, in Harare, Zimbabwe, you know what I mean? During the revolution, you know what I mean? And so then they eventually moved back, and then I grew up in Philly. You know, Philly is, like, from age 3 on, I was in Philly. But so they both instilled that in me, so I always had that, you know what I mean? But, yeah, you know, I think with me and him, I think the thing about life is you never can really judge a man until he's in the grave. You really don't know how things are going to happen. I didn't know I was going to be here. And I used to see my book right in the back over here. You know what I'm saying? I was like, yeah, I got to go on there one day, man. But you never really know what's going to happen in life. So with that situation, I just try to do it day by day. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think with all of our parents, we try to be better than they were. You know what I mean? And you see their weaknesses, you see their strengths, and you try to be better. And so that's what I'm trying to do, really.
And what is Talib Kweli doing with this soundtrack?
Talib Kweli is doing everything, man. This dude, he's a big part of the book, just in the sense of when my transformation started to happen as a writer, as a thinker, as a person, I started, that was around the time when Black Star was coming out and Raucous, and, you know, I was hearing lines like, at exactly which point do you start to realize that life without knowledge is death in disguise, or lines like, these cats drink champagne and toast death and pain like slaves on the ship talking about who got the flyest chain. And that, like, I never heard someone rap like that. You know what I mean? I was always into Pac and Nas, but he took it to another level for me. And so the first song I ever did as a rap artist, as a hip-hop artist, was called Gods in the Hood. Razz Cass reached out to me. Talib Kweli was on the track, and that was my first song. And we killed that joint, you know what I'm saying? And so from there, me and Kweli developed a relationship. And when I told him I wanted to do the soundtrack and sent him some of the music I've been working on, because I've been working on music, because really, to me, like, I want to use all mediums, you know what I mean? So to me, all of these things are languages. Like, writing a book, that's a language. Making a movie, that's a language. A poem is a language. All these different things. Music is a language. Music is probably the most universal language. Mm-hmm. So when I told him, I sent him the music. Actually, he's selling the book, this book on his website, KweliClub.com. He called me one day, was like, yo, how much is the book? Da 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 da. We started talking about the book. I'm like, actually, I got music. I sent him the music, and he was like, yo, like, I gotta get on this. Like, whatever. So his company, Javoti Media, is actually officially presenting the soundtrack. He's been involved, like, I mean, every day, just, you know, building, strategic. We were just in Baltimore. We went to a whole bunch of places in Baltimore. He was in the community, Reflection Eternal Barbershop, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he's just been a big part of, like, helping me, like, shepherding me into hip-hop, into the musical side of it. I wrote a book called It's Bigger Than Hip-Hop, which is, you know, used in hundreds of colleges and universities about hip-hop and, you know, kind of, like, examining the social political aspects of it. But yeah, he's just been like, he's been a big brother, really, in this whole situation.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, man.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all, man. This is amazing, man.
Is it hard not to smash any of the chicks that you teaching? Never mind. Don't worry about that.
You know, it's not hard, man. You know what I'm saying? It's discipline, man.
He's young. You know
discipline, man.
You know what? Don't even, this guy here.
Where can they get Buck, man?
They can get Buck at mksante.com, at qualiclub.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's been on the bestseller list for 2 years now. It's available everywhere. Anywhere books are sold, man. You know, they can get the soundtrack, qualiclub.com, mksante.com. It's streaming on DJ Booth. It's at OK Player. It's just everywhere, man.
Right.
But it's free.
Dupree Miller.
And it's free. And shout out to Dupree Miller, Jan Miller, Nina. You know what I'm saying?
You ad-libbing for them?
They're my people, too.
All right, that's MK Asante. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.